I'm so excited to share with you that the doors are officially open for my first ever phone-free event that's happening in Los Angeles, California on February 28th at Mudwater Gather in Santa Monica, with the option for you to dive even deeper on March 1st. Now look, this event is about you. It's about you building connections and community and us all really bringing this analog revolution to life and reminding our hearts and souls what we truly crave most, what nourishes our being, which is co-regulating with other humans, having our mirror neurons dance together, sharing experiences together, but also learning together. So on top of all the community and connection possibilities for you, there's also an incredible lineup of speakers. I've got internationally renowned nervous system expert Sarah Baldwin, Nike master trainer Brandon Collingsworth talking about purpose and meaning, and Mandy Balak, who's the president of the Gathering Festival, which is one of the largest marketing and branding conferences in North America. So we're going to be diving deeper into what does the future look like to walk alongside technology and use technology as a tool. Now look, if you want to dive even deeper, there's limited space for a VIP dinner on the Saturday night. And if you want to go even deeper, if it's aligned for leaders, coaches, therapists, entrepreneurs, branding, marketing, whoever is called, there's a mastermind on the Sunday morning with even more limited seating. And that's going to be about what does the future look like to create in this world with technology. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, you want to find out more and save your spot, go to markgroves.com/future. I can't wait to see you there.
The diseases of civilization are so preventable. It's unbelievable that we just not making change. But I think it's because people think that they don't have a choice. Put a pull-up bar in a doorway that you pass through regularly and just do a little swing on the pull-up bar. That's one of those things like the red light that will stack up. And right now it might not seem like much, but multiply, extend that out, that pull-up bar out times a year or 10 years or 30 years or the rest of your life. Suddenly you've completely restructured the shape of your shoulder girdle. You've decompressed all of your spinal segments, your cerebral spinal fluid and all the different fluids that are circulating through your, you know, from your sacrum all the way up to your brain. They're all moving better. Lymphatic fluid, all the different things are decompressed and able to circulate and move well. Just because you got a stupid $25 pull-up bar from Amazon totally. And put it in your freaking doorway.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today I have manual therapist, movement coach, the founder and creator of the Align Method and host of the Align Podcast, Aaron Alexander. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm a fan, like I said before, so I really appreciate being here, getting to talk.
Man, I'm so excited to be able to chat with you. After we connected, I then checked out all your work and I was like, all right, yeah, because my podcast is centered around quote unquote relationship, but really that is amplified through a romantic relationship. I really believe the inconsistencies, the things we need to work on, but it's amplified in any relationship. And so and I also find that when you head down a pathway of healing in one place, and let's say that's body, all of a sudden you will naturally, that will transcend to every area of your life. So it doesn't really matter where the invitation comes from. It's just one place that we're willing to maybe look a little closer and we have to maybe look a little closer. And I think with health, that's often a big thing. It's like our gateway to transformation often comes from pain, from illness, from, you know, gut issues or whatever it might be. So I'm curious, what is the Align Method? How did you even get to start that? Like, what inspired that?
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll answer what the Align Method is after. I think what you're saying, I think, is really interesting. And like the crossover relationship of, you know, the idea of relationship typically is relationship with another person, like a romantic partner. And then everyone said it in different iterations. I'm sure you've said it 1,000 different ways and had people say it different ways, but your relationship with someone else is going to start with your relationship with yourself. And if you're in partnership with someone and you are at it from like an autonomic level, like the autonomic nervous system, dysregulated, suddenly your filter and perception of everything that transpires in that relationship will be skewed based off of that threat response that you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. You know, so starting off, if a person wants to be in a healthy relationship, you know, the starting point would be kind of like cleaning your own mirror And the way that a person would do that would be sorting out what are some of the factors in my life that could be causing me to be in a chronically dysregulated state. You know, and a part of that could be, what does my body language communicate? Does my body language communicate to myself, my partner, my family, my, do you have a son or a daughter?
Son.
My son. Your son doesn't speak English, right?
Not yet.
Your son speaks voice tonicity.
Yeah.
He speaks voice prosody using like Stephen Porges polyvagal speak. Your son speaks body language. Your son speaks electromagnetic frequencies coming off from, you know, not just like natural healthy ones that you get from the atmosphere and from the earth and like being outside and nature and all that stuff, but also the non-native ones coming from the electrical instruments that they're potentially bombarded by all the time. Your, you know, everything. And so what is the Align Method? The Align Method is pretty much that, is taking fitness as opposed to it being something that a person does, you know, they get in their car and they drive to a gym or a yoga studio to do fitness. Fitness would be more something that they are. And so the way that we breathe, you know, you're breathing 18 to 20 odd thousand times per day. Every one of those breaths is like an autonomic signature. You know, there's a translation that's going to send that signal through the rest of your physiology to say, ah, this is the way that Mark feels right now. Let's start to upregulate XYZ neurotransmitter or hormone or whatever the thing may be to match that respiratory response.
All through the breath.
All through the breath.
So if it's like shallow, rapid breathing, you're going to be consistently releasing things like cortisol. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. The breath is interesting. So Align Method is more of a philosophy. It's making fitness who you are as opposed to a thing you do.
Mm-hmm. I like
and then
that.
We can kind of unpack more of that. Also, Align Method is something that the publishers of the book demanded that it was called a method. Originally, I just wanted to call it Align.
Yeah.
And so that's something that, you know, you experience through having editors and people in New York and people that are more structured.
Yeah, right, like, right. They're like, can we just call it a method, please?
We're going to drive and sales, how we get this done.
Yeah.
But for me, it was more of like this, more of like an epistemological kind of lens on things, or like a philosophical lens on things. So it's like a way of being, I think, would be of potentially not greater value. That's like the foundation bedrock for the doing, you know? So like, why are we moving? Yeah. Why are we training? Why are we doing these things in the first place? And then from there, once you sort that out, then it's like, okay, now what are we doing exactly? Well, here's the sets, here's the reps, here's the specific exercises you're doing. Here's a specific, maybe nervous system regulation, breathwork exercises or visual exercises. But underneath that, I think it's really important question to ask yourself, just like, you know, what are we doing here? Why am I doing this? Do I even care in the first place? Like, am I motivated to be training in the first place? So starting to get into like some of the deeper questions of, you know, why do we move?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I have a group that I run on the side that's called Aligned, and it's my thought on that was really that my liberation has come through the consistent pursuit of being aligned, being in integrity, essentially being aligned with my values, being aligned. Mm. I would say that like being aligned with my word or my nutrition, things like that. When I think about the ones you're equating to like movement as well, I'm curious, I've discovered this a little more recently, but I'm curious your thoughts on movement and alignment in terms of fitness being the pathway to that transcending, as where I'm used to people coming through the root of relationship, interpersonal. Yeah. I'm curious what your experience is with people coming in the root through movement and then how that impacts their lives relationally.
I think it's what you see in places like I moved to Austin from LA. And you see a lot of people, I think in large ways, kind of like following behind the lead of Rogan. You know, there's a lot of people that are I think subtly or not so subtly affected by that, like strong bro, you know, gorilla, swing clubs, jujitsu, guns, weapons, all of that stuff. Also likes breath work, cold plunge, psychedelics, you know, and is kind of has that a bit of like a balance on both sides.
Yeah.
And I think that you see a lot of people that used to be exclusively gym bros, which I think is a foundation. That's how I started. I started just really insecure.
I was gym bro-y too. Yeah, I had frosted tips and puka shell necklace. I get it.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think it's an important stage.
And then I do too.
Yeah, and then from there, you'll inevitably burn yourself out on that. It's similar, mm-hmm. like if you're seeking, if a person might have a sensation of feeling maybe, you know, not good enough, you know, or not worthy of love or any of that stuff. So then they have these compensatory strategies in the form of, I'm going to get more money, more power, more influence, or bigger muscles, or a car, or a house, or anything. And then they get to the end of that, and they realize, oh my God, I feel exactly the same as I did before. And yeah. So I think that a person actually achieving some level of self-mastery from a physical lens, I think it's really foundational to move through that and get to a point where you're like, okay, it's not just physical. You know, and much of yoga, for example, you know, like the actual meaning of yoga comes from Sanskrit word yuj, and it means to bind. Okay, so to bring together, to integrate, to connect. And that's what yoga has been about forever, you know, and asana means seat, you know, so it's just sitting with yourself, sitting with your breath. And then that got reconfigured into kind of like stretchy exercise fitness, you know, so it's more like movement and exercise based,
yeah,
which is also quite valuable. But the underpinnings, the foundation of all of that is to just sit with yourself and breathe. That's the foundation. And then we build on top of that, all of the training and the sweat and, you know, all the different more movement-based modalities. But oftentimes the cycle with that, if someone gets really deep into yoga, is they come back into that foundation. But it's this whole arc. Well, they'll move through, they'll do the fitness, they'll do the stretchy, they'll get abs, they can stand on their head, they can do handstands. They still feel the same. They've kind of reached the pinnacle of that point of physicality. They've mastered their physical selves. So now they can release the physical self, and they can be like, oh, okay, there's probably something deeper than this. And then from there, like, what if I just sit with myself? And you're like, oh my God, I can never do that. That's why I've been stretching and, you know, running 10 miles a day for the last six years.
What do you think about, because when I hear you say that, I think of, okay, we think that our value will be in the muscle, in the thing, right? So we like create this level of mastery in the physicality. We think the value in us is in our stretchiness, our toneness, whatever it is. Yeah. And so we get to this peak and then we realize that our value was never in that. I think it's much like you think that you're going to feel more valuable because you get more women or you get more followers or you get, but all that's ever left is you.
Yeah.
Regardless of your meat suit or your, you know, your Instagram following or whatever it is, you're still left with you. And so when I think if unworthiness is driving that, then at some point you realize that worthiness is not found in that. And then you come back to the, I guess, unresolved feeling of unworthiness. So I'm curious, is that the arc you're talking about? Is that sort of, am I understanding it correctly?
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's like you're always there with yourself. You can move to California and try to leave all of your problems and you'll feel like
you
a million
to Austin.
Bucks.
Everyone moves to Austin.
Yeah, you move to Austin and leave California.
Everyone's left California.
Yeah. Right. So you could sell all your stuff and, you know, you can get new outfits and you can get a new car and you can have this new beginning, like this reincarnation moment. And that lasts for 6 days and then you become yourself again.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same thing with a relationship. You know, I'm here with my girlfriend in Costa Rica right now. And it's a similar experience where it's like the things that are unresolved within the relationship, you arrive in Costa Rica, you're like, oh my God, this is incredible. This is amazing. You're all euphoric. You're in like the limerence phase of the relationship.
Right.
And then the exact thing that was happening 6 days ago comes up again, except now you're in a beach in Costa Rica. You know, and so like you can't geographically relocate yourself away from yourself. Like you always bring it along. And so you can keep on running away in the form of exercise, in the form of relocating yourself, in the form of all the different kind of like distractions. And then eventually you will likely arrive to a point where you actually need to just sit with yourself, which is like terrifying.
It is. Yeah, that hedonic treadmill, right? Like chasing the excitement. I see a lot of people in relationship do this where, let's say things are really bad, they get engaged. Things are really bad, they get married. Things are really bad, they have a kid. Things are really bad, they have another kid. Things are really bad, they have another kid. You know, like they're always creating a new high to not have to be with the truth, or a new, and we do this with gifts in relationship. We do this. Now, I'd say it all serves us, right? Because we're like trying to meet needs with wants. And it's important that we recognize when we're doing that. And also that you can't run through constant chasing of highs. You can't run, like, it doesn't make the lows not exist anymore. It might distract us from the lows. And I guess what I'm really thinking about is the value of the things that we decipher in chasing this. Like, when I think about creating this body or this physicality, in the last about a year, I've really focused on diet. Since I became a father, I was like, you know what? I'm, instead of getting dad bod, as is the sort of colloquial idea of what happens, I was like, what happens if you get in some of the best shape of your life when you're a father? And I was like, that narrative is just as available. So I really doubled down on eating well, moving into movement in a different way. And what I found from it was this level of discipline that I'd never discovered in myself.
Yeah.
You know, and different than the discipline I had when I was a gym bro, which really my motivation was to get chicks. So it was like, so, and to have more status as a male, because I would have, if you have more muscle, you have more status, you're more, I guess you feel safer probably too. So I'm curious what you think about that.
Yeah. One, so something that I can hear myself kind of like poo-pooing on physicality. Yeah. I think there's, it's also, and that's very common in like the spiritual realms and, you know, maybe some like the conscious relational realms. And, you know, I have a background with Rolfing, structural integration, and various different forms of manual therapy or body work. So craniosacral therapy, visceral manipulation, like working with the organs and the guts, and other different forms of manual therapy as well. But in that space, there's a lot of conversation around emotions being tied to, you know, like the issue is in the tissue, you know, and having these like cathartic releases and things of the like. And oftentimes in that, if you actually get to know some of the practitioners teaching and leading, they've kind of like let themselves go, and they like sit behind a bench or behind a table, and they're inside a room and they're working on people, and they're learning about all these different psycho neurobiological jargony terms to be able to share. And they're actually providing real significant work and value for people, but they've kind of like allowed their own physicality, their own like meat suit, you know, or physical vessel to go by the wayside. And oftentimes they feel kind of depressed and anxious and generally dysregulated themselves, even though they've really gone deep down this psycho-emotional spiritual path. And I think physical mastery is actually incredibly spiritual. And if you start to look at the body as kind of like a conduit for your psycho-emotional spiritual state, it's like the vessel that holds the spirit. From there, you're like, well, I really enjoy living in a home that is balanced and maybe has good feng shui and feels really spacious, and there's, you know, natural light coming in, and, you know, it really like, oh man, I could just like, oh, I like breathe inside my home. Mm-hmm. But if you're eating Doritos and you've been sitting on a chair looking into a computer to be able to make the money to be able to afford this home, this external home for yourself, and you're allowing your actual primary vessel to start to kind of collapse and dilapidate, you're going to start to have a translation of all of the things that you don't want. And coming back to the neurochemicals and the hormones and all the different translations of that felt state, it's going to be, if you get yourself, you know, do a blood panel or something of the sort, it's like, wow, there's like, you're pretty darn dysregulated here.
Yeah.
And how do you feel? It's like, oh my God, let me tell you how I feel. And so oftentimes if I'm in like conflict with my partner, for example, I find one of the best things that we can do is like go take a yoga class, you know, or go work out, or go for a walk outside, you know, or go for a swim, or go do a cold plunge or jump in a sauna and actually bring physical embodiment into the dynamic as opposed to getting locked inside of our heads. And inevitably, if a person starts to kind of become disassociated from their body's not going to feel so welcoming to come back to. And because you've kind of left your home, you'll start to find other homes that are separate from that. And yeah, you'll continue be having this like hungry ghost type energy. You know, you continue reaching out for something. And I think that we can come back to the bodies and really start to like respect the body as actually a vehicle to deepening our relationships.
Yeah. And I think there's an immediate feedback loop that's available through physicality and through nutrition that is not immediately available through the expression of self-worth and things like boundaries. Because, you know, when I'm working with someone on restoring or even creating a self, and then because a lot of people don't even know who they are or what they want because their lives have been about other people, which is, of course, an adaptive strategy. So we may not even take care of ourselves physically. We don't prioritize that, even in the conversation about body, which we can go down in a second, is that to me, there's like this conversation that's happening about physicality that's saying all bodies are healthy. And I was like, all bodies are healthy and okay. Yeah. There's such a fear of people experiencing shame because we know shame is painful. So we're like trying to insulate everybody from having any experience of rejection or any experience of not fitting in. Yet, I say that and I recognize that we also weaponize those things. So there's like a really interesting paradox that's existing, which is we want no one to experience bad feelings. Which, and I'm saying that as a collective, I don't mind people experiencing bad feelings because I know there's value in the experience of quote unquote bad feelings because they're directive. They're emotion evokes motion. So when I look at movement and body and physicality, I think what an opportunity, because when you're talking to someone about boundaries and you say, okay, when you set a boundary, it has this symbiotic relationship with self-worth. You're setting a boundary. So it's saying I matter. And then if you've never had boundaries or very few of them, you don't know that you matter. Yeah. So the first time you ever set a boundary, you're operating from an empty bank. You're actually making this giant leap that says, I matter. And it's actually making the first or one of the first deposits into self-worth. And so now you have self-worth that says, I matter. And now the more boundaries you do, and the way it's symbiotic, it feeds the system. The self-worth feeds the boundaries feed the self-worth. But the first one is always this leap into the abyss of like, oh my God, if I start operating from the place I matter, holy shit, no one's going to love me. I'm not going to have, you know, all the different things. But when I think about nutrition and movement, the moment you say, I'm going to go for that walk and you do it, immediately you feel better. When you lay your first boundary, you do not feel better. You feel worse. You feel scared. You need to co-regulate with another person or a group of people who are like, don't text them back. No, 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 no. We're holding tight. We got this. You know, like you need to tap into community to be resourced, to be able to hold a larger space. I'd say that's like energetically, somatically, you know, spiritually, whatever the hell words we want to use. Yeah. But with nutrition, if I start to eat better, although I'm sure you could speak more to like the not being fed by sugar as much, et cetera, but there is like a really good feeling after you eat nutritionally.
Yeah.
You know? And so what do you think about that?
So that's like when you say boundary, my mind goes to like literal translations of that in the body. And so one of those would be if you don't, so it's like as above, so below.
Yeah.
So what you think is just emotional or mental or thought or any of that ends up translating to decisions, which ends up having physical impact. And so...
So you're saying they're not different. And you're right. Actually, as you say that, they're not.
How you do anything is how you do everything. If you're a person that generally does not have boundaries, you don't keep your commitments, you don't keep the promises you keep to yourself, very unlikely that you will with somebody else. If you create a, and that's not absolute, I'm sure there's some people that have different situations with that. You know, anything, you know, I'm open to
Add the qualifiers. Yeah, yeah.
But generally speaking, that would be, if I were hiring someone for a job, I'd be observing the way that they dress, the way that they speak, the way that they eat, just the general mannerisms, the way that they communicate to people that aren't me. You know, all of that would be data to pick up on of like, okay, how they do this thing that doesn't pertain to the specific job probably almost certainly will spill in to the job in maybe not in a month, but in 3 months, 6 months, they become more of themselves. And suddenly like, oh, okay, here we go. This is now we're starting to see the mask is starting to come down. And here's like that deeper truth that's coming out. And so if you don't have boundaries around the way that you're eating, that might translate to a literal lack of boundaries in the lining of your gut. Suddenly you start having leaky gut syndrome. You're starting to actually disassemble some of the what was that wall. You're starting to open that up and you're breaking down your internal physiological boundary as a product of your lack of boundaries within your thoughts and your perception of who you think you are. And so a similar thing, a person that you could see if they are hypermobile and they do a lot of yoga, a lot of stretchy things, they don't really have too much interest in doing like weight training or anything like kind of create stability. Oftentimes with that, and you can just kind of take this for yourself and observe it, you know, people that you know in your life, oftentimes they'll have a tendency of being a little bit like loose in the way that they conduct themselves. They might show up a little bit late. They might be a little bit just, they're like a little stretchier, you know, and you could look at that from a lens of like, oh, they're actually just super adaptable and super flexible, which is like the positive lens on that.
Sure. Yeah.
And then there's like the other, well, they're also really inconvenient to be a part of a team because we're trying to keep the boundaries of the container and they're in this like adaptable, flexible land, you know, and that could eventually translate perhaps to a person, you know, maybe dislocating a joint or actually like breaking the boundary within the joint capsule. And it's a product of the actual physical actions that transpire of the way that a person thinks and feels, which translates to action, which translates to a physical manifestation. And a person that's hyper rigid, they're only going to do one thing and one thing only. You know, their mind can't be shifted. They might veer towards more stability-based training, which is great, but they're very inflexible. Mm-hmm. And so you oftentimes will see that manifest in the way that they are in relationship or the way that they are in communication or the way that they are on a team. They are on time. They're very stable. They're very dependable. They're sturdy, but they lack adaptability. They lack flexibility. And so for that person, something that would start to maybe open them up from like this mind-body connection place would be like, hey, Frank, I love, you know, everything about you. I love how stable you are. I love how consistent you are. You know, it's like you're a real asset to the team. Sometimes things get a little funny and we need to be a little bit more nimble and we need to be a little bit more adaptable and flexible. And I think something that could be interesting for you to support that would be, this Tuesday, there's an improv class coming up and we're going to go to the improv class and we're just going to come up with spur of the moment stuff. And we're going to think differently. And we're going to turn that into like a somatic experience and move differently, you know, or Frank might hate dancing in front of people. Almost certainly Frank is less inclined to like dancing in front of people.
I know many Franks.
Yeah. Than like stretchy pants.
Yeah.
Right. Stretchy Pants Sally loves ecstatic dances. She's always going to show up 30 minutes late to ecstatic dance, but she loves it. and so for Stretchy Pants Sally, be like, okay, I know you hate weight training, but I think it would be really valuable if we got on like a curriculum. You know, we're gonna create some programming, we're gonna do some periodization, and we're gonna explore deadlifts. We're going to explore creating some intra-abdominal pressure and creating some stability in your midsection because I can see your lumbar spine. You're just swaying about. Like your lumbar spine's like it's on the ocean all the time. It's just swaying about. And I know you have lower back pain. It's super common for you. I know there's like maybe some disc stuff. And I love that you can dance so well and you can move your hips so dynamically, but it's actually creating pain. Because you've gone too far, the pendulum swung too far to that direction. We need to start to introduce some stability. And now suddenly, you know, Sally or Frank, they start to come into more of like this homeostasis within themselves and the way they like actually feel in their bodies. And then that will almost certainly translate into the way that they show up for themselves. Sally, she has a schedule. She's on this periodization plan. She shows up every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. She follows the sets. She follows the reps. It starts to build in. She's like, oh man, like I'm the kind of person that if I commit to something, I get it done. And I follow through and I get to the end. So she starts to get that actual evidence. Evidence is so important. If we don't actually have physical evidence of who we think we are, you know, or who we think we'd like to be, I think it's going to be very challenging to build anything off of that because there's no actual structure to build upon. Like the evidence is the structure.
I love that because I think like self-love is that we are reliable for ourselves, that we can trust ourselves.
Yeah, and it's you become the parent for yourself that you can rely
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And like just as fast as you can create it, you can lose it. If you start to fall out of the rituals of being in alignment, you know, coming back to that word, with your values and who you want to be. You know, because you can instantly be a different person. And I know you could talk more on the physical level, how quickly the cell turnover is and we are actually different. Yeah. But, you know, how long does it take for someone to recognize they want to, you know, taking, let's say, the average American or average Canadian, which might be a little off in weight by a bit, but not much. And it's like, how long does it take someone who feels out of alignment to actually through the strategies that you're talking about actually build a different self, a different life?
I think it comes to like the Viktor Frankl, what's your why stuff.
Tell me more.
So if you have a kid, you have like a significant why to be healthy.
Yeah. That motivated me as a father. It was like, I'm going to teach my son what it actually means to be in integrity. Like what it means to stand for things, which means standing for myself.
Yeah. So you've gone beyond yourself, which the irony is the more a person focuses on themselves, the more lonely they become. And so now we're baking in a culture that's kind of self-obsessed, not necessarily by choice, just by exposure. And most people are probably interested in their presence, the way that they appear on social media, you know, or how many views they might have or likes that they might have or, you know, followers or any of that stuff. Just coming back to integrity with yourself, you know, and not really caring so much about like other people's perception of who you are, like being still with yourself, being able to be alone with yourself. Like those are the things that I think are really the most honesty can come up. Like I did a darkness retreat maybe 6 months ago or so, where you just sit alone in a dark room for, mine was 4 days and 5 nights. So I went in like a Wednesday or Thursday, you blow out the candle. I used to sit alone. And they bring you food once a day, and all the stuff comes up. And I was crying and I was yelling and, you know, various different emotions and such started to come through. And I was dancing and I was doing improv and I was doing comedy and I was rapping and there was a bathtub. So I was doing cold plunges and then like doing aerobics naked so I don't get hypothermic because it was wintertime. And in an experience like that, you know, cut away from the world, which so few people have that because we're so exposed to other people's perceptions of ourselves all the freaking time. Like it's a part of the cake that we're baked in. And so having that experience of really just getting to see like, who am I without anybody looking? And the things that came up that were really interesting was just like at first screaming, you know, or like crying or laughing or, you know, just saying ridiculous things. It was so interesting to see how much of a governor that I have on myself, even when I'm completely alone, because it's like this trained governor that I have, like, well, what are people going to think about that?
Right.
And it's like, even by myself, there was still that sensation of me kind of like a clenching in a way of like, oh, I don't know if that's acceptable, if that's an acceptable part of me. And what I could see or feel or experience in that was actually different layers of my personality started to arise as a product of me starting to release that like judgment of myself that someone might, you know, think differently of me or like I might think differently of me.
Yeah.
So me maintaining that judge, which I don't even know where the judge came from. It come from my parents, it come from culture, it come from the Bible. The idea that, you know, there's like a white bearded man sitting up in the corner of the room while I'm like
Sky Daddy. You
know, exactly. And so it was really, really interesting if a person can have the spaciousness to start to observe, like, how much judgment do I hold on myself throughout the day, all of the time? And what does that judgment do to my capacity to, coming back to the physical plane, my capacity to circulate fluids through my body? If I continually have this clenching in my throat, or a clenching in my jaw, or a clenching in my, you know, anal sphincter, or any of the sphincters throughout my intestines, what does that do for the actual physical circulation of lymphatic fluid, the actual circulation of blood, the actual circulation of my physical parts? And so you can, so in the releasing of the shame and the judgment, suddenly there's an immediate one-to-one translation on the physical plane. And you could also go the other direction and you could say, oh, interesting, I have this chronic contraction in my physical suit that actually is a one-to-one relationship to my autonomic nervous system that's causing me to start to produce myself in such a way that matches that physical postural pattern. And so something a person could do is, I know I'm kind of going a couple different directions, but an actionable thing a person can do to come from the physical to the mental emotional, your breath is almost certainly going to match your autonomic state in that moment. And you may have never actually, maybe not since you were a little girl or a little boy, been able to actually get a full exhalation. Like that sensation when you're relieved and you just naturally every time you exhale, you're engaging that parasympathetic side of the nervous system. Every time you inhale, you're engaging that sympathetic side of the nervous system. Something that's interesting with that, apparently, if you are breathing in, you're more likely to remember something because you're activating more of that sympathetic side. You're more engaged. If you're exhaling, it's more of like, it's like a letting go. And so every time you're breathing in, you're spinning yourself up to be alert. Every time you're exhaling, you're saying it's safe to completely chill. Yeah. If it's safe to completely chill, it's safe to menstruate. It's safe to digest. It's safe to repair at like a deeper level than you ever actually maybe believed that it was safe to repair from. And so you can start to come through and say, all right, I haven't been able to breathe with the lower portions of my lungs. I'm not really getting air into like the lower lobes. Most of my air is kind of up. It's like my clavicles pull up, my neck pulls up, and I'm getting a lot of air in the top portion of the lungs. They're much smaller. They're like this conical shaped top portion. So it's much less surface area to be able to get air into. But it's efficient because you can move air fast if you're mouth breathing and you're breathing up with the upper extremities.
Oh, interesting.
And so if you're breathing in that way, that's actually been inhalation biased, and also more sympathetic biased in the sense that it's kind of more like fast, maybe a tendency might be towards like mouth breathing or just like over breathing. You might think that you're actually starving for air because of a lack of respiratory efficiency with the muscles and the way that you've trained yourself to breathe. And what will happen with, if you breathe inefficiently, this goes into something called the Bohr effect, where you'll change the chemistry of your blood to start to think there's not enough air in your environment. And so if you start to increase...
Oh, that's interesting.
This is very interesting. If you start to unpack, it's like, oh my God,
yeah,
I feel like I'm suffocating. How many people walking around the world, if 20% of people walking around the world right now in the United States are, you know, at least, you know, so says statistics, are anxious, you know, and how many people are suffering from depression? How many people are like taking any type of pharmaceutical drug in order to pretty much like escape these feelings that I don't know how to tend to? Oftentimes there might be kind of a feeling of like, I feel like I'm drowning. I feel like I'm suffocating. I can't get this like weight off my shoulders. And so you can actually come through and start to work with the breath and maybe start to work on breath holds. Maybe start to make your body less sensitive to CO2 by holding your breath for a little longer than typical, by emphasizing your exhalation, and then hold for a bit. Maybe you could exhale and then take a walk between a couple phone poles and start to observe that CO2 response starting to build up, which will cause you to feel like, suffocating, I need to get air. Start to respectfully nudge that response, and then you'll become less sensitive to the buildup of CO2 in your bloodstream. And then suddenly when you release that, a la the Bohr effect, if you increase CO2, you'll also increase acidity of the blood, and you'll make the hemoglobin cells, the red blood cells, you'll make them less stingy with holding on to oxygen. because they're saying there's not as much air out there. We need to be more liberal with the release of oxygen to your muscles. If you're chronically in this like hyperventilatory pattern and you're chronically under stress and you're maybe mouth breathing, particularly at night, you know, and you're breathing as opposed to like what would be ideal for breathing would be around like 5 to 6 breaths per minute. You're more what's in like the common realm, like 15 to 20 breaths per minute. You're hyperventilating yourself throughout the day. Yeah. And any person that's sensitive to this stuff will say, oh, Mark's stressed. He's saying all the right things. You know, I'm not actually saying Mark, I'm just saying, you know, because you raised your hand for that.
Yeah.
You're at an autonomic level and you can't hide from the body.
No, exactly.
At an autonomic level, your body is saying, oh, like I feel anxious. I feel like there's not enough. I feel like I need to get what I can while it's there. If suddenly we start to change that back and say, oh no, actually you have through exposure therapy of reducing the buffet of air coming into you, suddenly globally, all of the blood throughout your system and your brain and all the different systems that are recognizing that are saying, Mark has more than enough. Mark can chill. Mark can relax. Mark can hold his breath for 3 minutes. It's not a big deal. And so now suddenly you're starting to slow things down and you can start to maybe emphasize breathing through the nose. You can bring your hands down to the lower portion of the ribs, start to breathe more like horizontally, start to bring that breath out to the sides, bring your hands back to your lower back, start breathing into the low back. Now suddenly if you're doing that, you're starting to decompress your spine every time you take a breath. Multiply that times 18 to 20,000 breaths per day, hopefully less because now you're starting to be more chill. You know, so let's knock it down to like 16,000 breaths per day, but like really efficient breaths where you're filling up the totality of each of those lobes of the lungs, you know, and all the alveoli are just really getting filled up and then release. And it's like suddenly your factory starts to come online. It's efficient. It doesn't feel like it's scrambling.
I know on my Aura ring at night, I average about 15 breaths per minute, something like that.
How many breaths?
15.
Oh yeah. And yeah. Do you ever try taping your mouth?
Yeah. You know, I bought, the stuff that opens, I have a deviated septum.
Oh yeah.
So I bought some stuff that opens up my nostrils. That makes a huge difference. I definitely notice more air. Yeah. And I put the mouth one on once, but I'm going to do it more religiously because it's something I wanted to play with opening up my airways and my nose.
Is your mouth dry in the morning?
No. I wouldn't say all the time.
Okay. Check tomorrow and see if you wake up. If your mouth is dry, then you're breathing through your mouth throughout the night. And, you know, the nose is structured to breathe. The mouth is not. The mouth is structured to breathe under extreme duress. You know, if you're working out really hard and you need to get air fast, then the mouth is totally fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But general, like first, second, third gear of breathing ought to be all nose breathing. And that's because it's going through, you know, it's humidifying the air, it's filtering the air, it's actually slowing it down, creating resistance. It's completely changing the muscles that are being engaged in order to breathe. And all those muscles, once again, they're tied back into that autonomic nervous system. So when you're using certain muscles are chronically have too much tone, you know, so maybe some of the muscles around like the neck, you know, or the masseter or the diaphragm, that's all sending information once again up into your autonomic nervous system that, oh, like we're stressed out. And if you're stressed out, it's, you know, it's not like a moralistic thing. It's not bad or good. It'll just, your body will respond and say, okay, we're going to give you what you need to be stressed. And it becomes this self-perpetuating cycle. And so that was, you know, one of the things that a person could do would just becoming, how can I start to change the chemistry of my blood to be more efficient so that there's not a sensation of I need more. It's actually coming from a place of like, oh no, I feel safe.
How long does it take for someone who is more higher respiratory rate, more upper chest breathing, to being conscious of the things you said, like breathing into the ribs, breathing into the lower back? How long does it take for that to become autonomic?
It would depend on the person and how adaptable their nervous system is. You know, so if a person is like Frank, you know, where he's very rigid, he's very stuck, and he's also built a ton of layers around those systems, you may be called armor, you know, or compensatory patterns, it's going to take him a lot longer. something that I experience with doing, and anybody listening, if they are, do have experience doing maybe like yoga or therapy, you know, actually like doing hands-on work with people as they're going through different yoga practices, or body work or manual therapy, massage or chiro, any of that stuff, they will know that Stretchy Sally responds super quickly. And so anything we do to Stretchy Sally, it's like, oh my God, I'm amazing. I have the hands of God. Everything I do, she just responds. It's incredible. And then Stretchy Sally won't maintain those changes. So she'll come back and have the same thing going.
How did you start to make these connections?
I think it's just, I started training clients at LA Fitness 20 years ago. And so that was like the genesis of starting to get really into fitness. And that was coming from me being really just obsessed with bodybuilding and wanting to get as like big as I possibly could be, as fast as I possibly could be. And that was like, I think a lot of compensatory strategies as a product of, you know, whatever the stories are. My dad got into drugs. He ended up like going to jail. So kind of the home started to break a little bit. Now he's doing really well, which is great. But my environmental situation started to destabilize. And so I compensated by finding excessive stability in the body because I wasn't getting it, you know, in that like paternal relationship or the home relationship. And so I was just really obsessed with bodybuilding to start through, I think, the lens of compensation. And then that translated to creating a lot of injuries with myself and just like general pain, like stiffness. And then there was just a natural arc towards like, I need to fix these injuries. You know, there's like joints that are blowing out. I have all sorts of stuff going on, and then seeking help with that. And then from there, I'd be like, oh my God, that help was helpful. So I'm going to go study structural integration, and I want to study different forms of body work and manual therapy. And then getting more, coming back again, more into movement. And like, you know, I did ballet for a couple years and different forms of dance and, you know, getting into just really like being a novice in a lot of different forms or modalities of movement and training and just wanting to learn more, you know. And then thankfully you've had this experience as well, I'm sure. I placed myself early on, but placed myself in like the accountability role of being a teacher.
Yeah.
And so that's, if you're a teacher, you're going to learn the most because you don't want to be ashamed of like, you know, not doing a good job teaching. And so it just has been like an ongoing building in that way.
Not being aligned with our teaching, you know, like there is a responsibility that's incumbent upon choosing to be a teacher of some things. And that is to be in integrity with what you teach. Ideally, that's a value that all teachers would hold, but it's not. And that's, you know, not here for judgment, but just a truth.
Well, eventually you creep up, you know, and that's the thing with the teacher. And it doesn't show up so much when a teacher has 6 students, you know, but it might show up if they start to turn into like a Bikram, you know, where suddenly it's like, oh, I have a million students, you know, or I have $6, you know, or maybe, you know, I have $20,000. Yeah, yeah. That's a very different person will show up that has $20,000 compared to a person that has $20 million.
Very true.
And it's not actually a very different person. It's just going to be more of that person, you know, similar, like a person that's not in a relationship. You know, it's like, oh, everything's cool. Everything's chill. It's all good.
Yeah, I got this. You know? I got
this.
And then
you get 8 months into the relationship. You're like, oh, this is, here I am.
Yeah, I don't got this.
Here we are.
Well, I love this overlap of movement because for me, I think there's so much of your story arc is similar in that I was obsessed with movement from a compensatory strategy. I was a soccer player, but I was obsessed with the gym.
Yeah.
And there was a point where I started to integrate yoga that made me have to sit with and be with other things. Flexibility was hard, all that kind of stuff. And then I found I really loved that and started to draw. I felt like weightlifting was starting to not be fun anymore because I'd been doing it for so long.
Yeah.
And then now I find myself coming back into that middle place where I'm doing Kundalini, I'm doing yoga, I'm doing kettlebell stuff, movement-based things. And I love it again because there's like a, I think also you were saying before that when people start to enter that place of discipline and following through, that you start to feel better. And I can say that I didn't know I didn't feel good till I felt better. Do you know what I mean? Like there was this awareness that came from dropping 25 pounds that I wouldn't have even thought like, oh, if I drop 25 pounds, I'm going to feel world different, but I felt different because I was lighter.
Yeah.
But I was lighter in every definition of that word.
Yeah.
And there was also a there was an observation of what I was capable of that I hadn't necessarily witnessed in myself. So there was pride. There was like a pride, but a healthy pride, kind of pride that was like, oh man, like I can do shit. I'm 45 and I feel better than ever.
Yeah, you have evidence.
Yes. Yeah, exactly what you were saying evidence. Earlier.
It's like, it's a big deal.
Right.
But you can tell, you can tell yourself all that, like you can do mirror work and you can look at yourself and do all the different things and journal and, you know, all of that. Like none of that will touch actual physical evidence that last week I did something I thought I could not do. This week I walk away from it at the edge of walking. Like I was going to quit 30 times and I didn't do it. I didn't do that to myself. I stuck it out. I made it all the way through. At the end of that, I would propose that will blow any mirror work or journaling out of the water.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the type of person that sticks to things. I'm committed. I'm stable. Just go be stable.
Right.
Like find yourself something that, you know, enter a competition. If you're getting into your, you started jiu-jitsu 2 weeks ago, your white belt, enter a competition. You know, if you got some running shoes, like start training for a marathon. You know, if you're, you know, like whatever your thing is, raise the bar on yourself and force the accountability so that suddenly like I need to show up or I'm going to have XYZ emotion that I don't, you know, I'd like to like not go into that. It's probably going to be something around like, you know, whatever, the shame that you told your friends you were going to do that. And I think that's like shame can be a really healthy factor as well. We're like, I actually don't want to feel that way. Because I know when I'm ashamed, I'm doing something that I'm not proud of. You know, so if we didn't have that shame, we would have no boundaries. We'd have no stability.
Right.
We'd have no structure. So it's like, how can we leverage this shame to work for us as opposed for us to be, you know, overwhelmed by it?
Well, I think that's so much of the conversation about not wanting people to experience any negative emotion is because we haven't seen the value in something like shame. There is toxic shame, which is the weaponization saying, you're a bad person because you did this. But when I experience healthy shame because I did something that violated my boundaries or violated my values, I'm experiencing the recognition that there's a better version of me available.
Yep.
And I remember listening to this book from Koshin Paley Ellison, who is a marriage and family therapist and a Zen monk. And he was saying that that's that recognition. It's moral shame that you violated your own morality, that there's like, actually you are capable of more and you're disappointed that you're not doing that. What a motivator that is. And I'm like, but we live in this culture. You were saying about this sort of self-obsessed culture. And I think there's so many layers to that because I think the one thing is like, we are obsessed with this experience of wanting to be special. But that specialness needs to be validated by everybody else. Man, I think it's just this perfect storm. You know, in Coddling of the American Mind, Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff talk about this combination of helicopter parenting mixed with the introduction of smartphones and social media and then cancel culture. And you just have this for certain groups of young people, and I sound like an old guy now, but like for certain groups of younger generations that grew up with this, which is not their fault, but actually this is the product of the environment, is that they've been protected from the experience of challenges to their opinions, to their perspectives, and insulated from experiencing negative emotion with the thought that if there's a negative emotion, the thing that's causing it needs to be stopped, not the exploration of themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And it's like, as you're talking, like coming back to relationship stuff, you know, it's if a person, like the rupture actually creates the opening or the space for growth. And if there's not, so you could look at if you're experiencing conflict in your relationship or conflict, maybe some conflict with yourself. You know, it's like what's the quote that the night is darkest before the dawn. You know, you might be in a place where like, oh my God, I can't take any more of this. Another lens on that is like, this also could be opening up space and also starting to create initiative to actually want to create change. You know, what got me involved in doing therapy and being like, I need a therapist, was me being kind of in the ballpark of wanting to end my life and being like, I can't, my only option is to actually lean in and go deeper. And within that, it's like, oh my God. So the opening to allow the sprout, you know, or the lotus leaf or whatever to come out came from the chasm that was the rupture. You know, and so it's I think languaging is really important, you know, and perspective on things is really important. And things that might seem like the most devastating, terrible, unbearable thing might actually be the exact thing that a person needs. In fact, typically is, and that my experience talking to people after the fact, at least, is the exact thing that the person really needs in that moment in order to be able to actually evolve or change.
Yeah, it's fascinating how we tend to wait or require this rupture in order to choose transformation. And I think it's only...
It's the only way.
Right. And I think it's only...
There's no reason to change.
Exactly. And I think once you...
We're good.
Exactly. Like, life's still comfortable. Who I'm being is still comfortable. Yeah. I don't need to choose this other thing that's trying to grow through me or what I'm being called to do. It is interesting, though, after we experience the rupture, that we recognize we didn't have to wait for the rupture. Like, it's almost like that is one of the gifts of the rupture, is the recognition that we had little ruptures or semi-big ruptures far before, that we learned to ignore, that maybe we were inherited the ability to ignore.
But you might be avoidant of conflict.
Yeah.
And then it's going to start to build up. You know, and that's like, if we're afraid of, I don't know enough about forest fires, so please don't listen to my opinion on forest fires, but if we're afraid of forest fires and our whole thing is like, we got to stop all fire, like fire is bad, it's hot, it kills stuff. You know, we would neglect the fact that perhaps certain parts of that forest burning is creating space and fertilizing and allowing space for some of the bigger trees.
It's part of the cycle.
It's part of the cycle. And it's also preventing the potential of like this nuclear fire that just destroys everything.
Yeah.
You know, and so within that, it's being willing to be open to uncomfortable things. And one of the things, coming back to the physical plane, that could start to train the brain and the body and the mind and perception to be able to actually lean into hard things in a conversation or within your emotions or within yourself might be actually doing physically hard things and being able to say, oh, here's a sensation I don't like. I don't like sitting in the cold plunge. I don't like sitting in the sauna. I don't like exercising because it's just the feeling. It's hard.
Yeah.
And so if you become a person, it's like, you know what? Like, feelings are hard. I can address the feeling. Like, one of the things that I'll do is I'll address the feeling and I'll say, is this an injury? If it's an injury, I do everything I can to stop it because I don't want to get an injury. If it's not an injury, I say, this is just a story.
Hmm.
And, you know, and so if you're experiencing this, I feel cold, you know, or it's like, or you're exercising, you know, or I feel itchy. I have an itch. I got some poison ivy. Like, you could be a person like, I can't take it. It's turning me like a neurotic mess. A lot of that is a story being spun and going out of control. And so a person can come back and start just like having exposure therapy with reducing their sensitivity to CO2. They say, okay, I want to have more spaciousness for breathing. So I'm actually practice not breathing. I'm going to actually lean into a hard thing now so that later when I actually am in some situation that might be an emergency or whatever it is, maybe I'm potentially drowning. You know, I'm in Costa Rica. You know, I'm in the ocean. Suddenly I put in the repetitions before to go into the ocean and say, oh, I know I can hold my breath for at least a few minutes. So now what does that do? It brings on this actual physical sensation of, or mental emotional sensation of confidence. And then also creates like, you know, the real evidence, you know, from like a chemical perspective of the blood as well. So that would be something that the more a person can lean into hard things now, the easier their life will be later. The more a person wants to avoid hard things now, the harder their life will be later.
Right.
You just squish around the stress. You can choose stress or stress will be imposed on you.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. And we might, you know, there's that meme that's like, choose your heart. Like, one thing's hard, the other thing's hard, choose your heart. Like, every pathway is hard. Even what is seemingly easy, it always comes and gets your ass in the long run. You know,
it's just how prepared will you, like, the hardness is coming.
Yeah.
You know, winter is coming, the storm is coming. Like, it's just, accept it.
It's the nature of life.
If you don't get broken up with, you're going to break up. If you don't break up, she's going to die. You know, so like something's right. gonna like at some point there will be pain.
All of that is true.
Yeah,
and you're that gonna is get, the truth of life.
Yeah, the economy is gonna collapse again, and then it's gonna come back, and it's gonna collapse again.
Not you this know, like, time, Aaron. It's gonna keep yeah, right, going. It right. keeps growing. We'll just print more money, raise interest yeah. rates. Everything will be fine.
Yeah. We'll just, so I think that the people that probably will have the most consistency of like mood regulation probably would be the people that say, oh, wow, life is really easy right now. We should do some hard stuff.
Right. That's actually a great point.
And if you can lean into that and not be masochistic with it, but just be like experimental with it, you know, and like that would be if like ultimately the thing that you could do that would be probably the hardest out of all this stuff is once again, like we're saying, being like, just sit with yourself. If you can sit with yourself for long enough, another, you know, odd thing I did was a Vipassana meditation where you sit, you know, meditate.
How long did you do it?
10 days.
How was it?
Really great. Amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things you don't, you know, want. Well, I guess I kind of wanted to do it. But it was really hard because I could see my car in the parking lot. I think it'd be a lot for people if they decide to do a Vipassana, which I would highly recommend. I think they're amazing. Don't put your car in like viewing sight.
Your escape route.
Yeah, you're just like literally every day you just walk past the car with your head down, like looking down at your feet, you know, and you're not allowed to look at anybody or talk to anyone. They call it noble silence. And, you know, you get up at like 4:30 in the morning, you know, a monk type guy rings a bell for everybody. And then you get up and then you go and you do an hour meditation and then you come out. Then you like hang out for a little bit. Then you come back and do an hour meditation. Then you come back. You just do that until the night. Then they have this like discourse with this fella called Guenca.
Yeah, recordings, right? Of him.
The recordings, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you go to sleep at like, you know, 8:30, 9, and then you just do that again. And yeah, that would be, yeah, just an example, like in that, just all of the things come up as you're sitting there and all of the stories and all of the anxieties and all like the most amazing thing that I think that's like something that could potentially be an indication that you're on the right path is when you start coming up with every excuse of why it's time to stop. It might actually, and there also is the other chance that it might actually be time to stop as well. So, you know, you got to trust your gut.
Yeah.
But so often with that, it's like, oh, that was you being on the edge of breakthrough.
Where you
and that
up.
Was all of those parasitic energies that have been inhabiting you and your consciousness and your psyche and your spirit, depending upon your belief systems, for the last God knows how long, saying, don't stop, or rather, like, don't let me go. And that's when all of the stories started coming up for me of this is stupid, you know, this isn't even healthy, I'm going to hurt myself. I had this like crazy hip pain that felt like it was like my hip was going to be like sawed off afterwards. And it was literally at the edge of that. And just one of the examples that was kind of interesting, hip was in so much agonizing pain. I literally thought that I was injuring myself, but I was like, okay, I don't want to move. I'm going to like stick it out. And suddenly at the end of that, or well, there was an end that just came about on its own. That sensation of pain that I had in my hip, it turned into like an orb. It felt like a warm orb and it moved from my hip and it went up my spine. I could feel it moving up my spine. I'm just sitting there, you know, I haven't used any psychedelics. I'm just like,
you're just in meditation,
just meditating,
moving an orb up your chakra system.
I'm observing an orb move up my, it's like this warm orb of like stress and it moves out of my hip. My hip's completely clear. And then it moves up, 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 goes up my spine. And then I have like old shoulder injuries and it moved out. It tried to move through my whole body and like be, I don't know where it would go, I guess released or whatever. And it gets stuck in my shoulder where there's all this old tension. And now suddenly my shoulder hurts and I'm feeling that sensation of pain that I had in my hip. Now it's in my shoulder. And I just watched that movement of what was bound up energy in my hip. I watched it move from my hip in real time, up my spine, everything moved fine, stops in the shoulder where I have this old injury. Now my freaking shoulder hurts. So I'm like, what is pain and what is avoidance? Like, what are the strategies right. that I have to get out yeah. of this pain? You know, and so then you get into the topic of like pain, which is, a you know, also another really robust topic to explore. And so much of pain is tied to your psycho emotional experience and your perception. And if you're in a state of fear, which fear is going to be tied to your breathing patterns. So if you're, that's your breathing style, that's also going to start to express the corresponding, like we mentioned, hormones and chemicals, neurochemicals, all the different things, neurotransmitters that have a direct translation to higher levels of anxiety and tension and stress and, you know, potentially fear.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting, this correlation that you're talking about of the body's retention of pain in different parts of the bodies. I follow a lot of like Carolyn Mace's work too, who wrote An End of the Spirit. And she just wrote a new book that's really good called The Power of Holy Language. Mm-hmm. And I think of David Hawkins and just these other teachers, Louise Hay, right? Where it's this conversation about, and what you're talking about, this like what lives in our body lives in the psyche, lives in the experience. And you can do work in the spiritual plane, but you have to do work in the physical plane. Like there, it's like as above, so below, as you were saying, and as within, so without, you know, it's the, where you were saying boundaryless, well, then your gut starts to lack boundaries.
Yeah.
And
your joints become unstable.
Yeah. And so like, if I start to have boundaries
and your connective tissue, maybe you start getting fat. Now suddenly like the elasticity of your skin, this is a weird thing that I don't know. I don't have any like scientific, you know, data or anything around it, but I think that there's something interesting around, our perception of ourselves being kind of like the sculptor of our bodies. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I notice with myself. If I like look in the mirror and my body doesn't match the perception of like what I desire, because I have a set perception of like, no, this is who I am.
Right.
Suddenly that perception, you know, perception of self, my identity structure starts to take action to start to manifest the physical form that I believe that I am. And so I have this kind of perception of like, okay, like this is kind of what my body looks like. And I would imagine that perception would start to change based off of a person's history. You know,
right.
Maybe start to come to a place where you might not actually accept yourself being more fit. Yeah, because you don't actually have the storyline to match that.
Right. And all the behaviors that have to go with it, because they wouldn't be consistent with who you've been.
It wouldn't be consistent with who you think you are and who you think you maybe deserve to be and what you think you deserve to get from yourself and what kind of food you think you deserve. If you're a person that thinks that, you know, I don't really deserve organic blueberries, you know, I'm like a McDonald's smoothie guy or whatever, McDonald's McFlurry or whatever. Like I'm a McFlurry kind of guy. You know, so much of that is who you believe you are. I'm a McFlurry kind of guy, you know, and that's totally fine. It's not a moralistic wrong or right thing. Again, it's just, it's matching your perception of who you think you are. And that part is highly malleable, which is, you know, it gets interesting.
Especially when we orient to personal growth from a place of brokenness, because then if I'm not broken, how do I source motivation?
Yeah.
If I'm a perfectionist, it means I have perfectionism in the desire to be seen as perfect, so I'll finally get love and affirmation. So I actually achieved a ton of things through that motivation. How will I achieve things without that motivation? So it's like if the wound is also the source of one, presenting as a victim and sourcing connection through that, or two, becoming an overachiever and sourcing worth through that, who am I without it? And as we started off saying, is like, actually, you're worthy without it. And that's actually the lesson, is you get to a place of exasperation. But there is something about the consistency of physicality that I think is really important, that the culture glosses over or says is fat shaming. And while there is fat shaming, and I'm not negating that, there is also the recognition that often we hold weight for a long period of time as a way of protecting ourselves. And so it's like, can we get to the thing we're protecting ourselves from? Usually trauma. I had this amazing woman named Allison Bird on the program, and she was talking about how instead of thinking like, I can never be fat again, because she had dealt with being overweight and protecting herself, being protective, not wanting to be seen as desirable, all the things. She was saying, why not see it as evidence? Like, I can shapeshift.
Yeah.
And if I can shapeshift to be big, why can't I shapeshift to be fit?
Yeah.
And seeing it as this skill. And I was like, oh, what a different way of perceiving this thing. But at the end of the day, what you're saying, which I love, is that it's actually the unfamiliarity of who you are or have been and who you desire to be comes with a collection of habits, rituals, and behaviors that are a totality of alignment. Like, you can't get aligned in one area of your life and not clean up the others. Like, if you have toxic choices in terms of your relationship to your body or nutrition, you're going to have toxic choices with people, or at least your own behaviors, because they're not separate things. And so one pathway to healing is a pathway to all healing. And I just love it. I think it's like the coolest.
Yeah. And sometimes the thing that's the hardest for you might not be the thing to do first. You know, so for you, if getting your physical body organized is hard, because it's pretty much what you're doing. If you look at scar tissue or adhesions in the body, it's disorganized layers of connective tissue, compared to if you look at healthy tissue that's well hydrated and all the hyaluronic acid and all, you know, all the different compounds and fluids are circulating well, it looks like this beautiful crystalline matrix that's like, it's like a snowflake. It's like, it's beautiful. It's like it has this natural organization to it. So you create disorganization in the body from just like sitting down and punching over your cell phone all day. Not a moralistic thing. There's nothing right or wrong about it. It's just what it is. It's disorganized and cacophonous. And what that translates to would be, you know, like a smudging in your nervous system and your body's perception of where you're at in space. So you just generally become more disorganized in your body. And maybe you feel a little bit more chaotic. Maybe you feel a little bit more distractible. Maybe you feel just like tight in your body, you know, and maybe you've become kind of so bound up physically that the motivation to go work out is just not there.
Yeah.
Totally reasonable. I don't have motivation to work out often. My main motivation to work out usually is like community. I use exercise as just a bridge to connect with people, because that's like what really, really feels the best for me.
Yeah.
You know, but for a person where they can't find the motivation to eat better, where they can't find the motivation to work out, like maybe physical isn't their thing, start off and work with another house. You know, so the physical house, not your thing yet, you know, so maybe look around your house and say, what does this, if I didn't know myself and I walked into my house, what story would I fabricate about the person that lives here? Would I think they're like really organized? Would I think they're really like someone I could trust and depend on? Would I think they're really creative? Would I be really impressed with their hobbies? And like, wow, like this person seems really interesting. Like, I would love to get to know this person. Take yourself out of it. You know, and then say, like, maybe I start to make my home a little bit more like the person that like I would like to hang out with. You know, and then I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I'm gonna get a guitar. I'm gonna paint the walls a color that makes me feel good. I'm gonna open the window. I never open my blinds. Why don't I open my blinds? I never even open the windows. I'm gonna start opening the window. I'm gonna be an open window guy now. You know, and now suddenly that starts to create a little subtle shift. Maybe I start to turn my Wi-Fi router off when I sleep, because I'm the type of person that prioritizes my sleep. Maybe I start to get, turn some of my lights in my house red at night, because I'm aware that I'm a little bit anxious. I'm a little bit stressed out. You know, I overbreathe from my understanding based off of listening to this podcast. It would be, you know, I could start to maybe alleviate that chronic sensation of stress that I have if I just slow my breath down a little bit. I'm also aware that light, photobiomodulation, is a fancy way of saying light affects our biology in real time. You know, you throw some blue lights on, blue lights being, you know, the lights that you have in your house, or like it's just the frequency of light you get from the sun. You know, it's like a totally natural, healthy thing. But if you get that blue light exposure at nighttime, when your body's starting to upregulate the different chemicals and hormones that are indicative of sleep and rest and repair, suddenly you're going to turn off those hormones and you're going to turn on the cortisol and the norepinephrine and the things that cause you to say like, oh, it's time to wake up. So I'm the type of person that cares about my sleep. I'm the type of person that's sensitive to light and mood. I'm going to maybe change some of my lights red. And now I walk in, I flip the light switch on and I'm like, huh, I'm like a red light guy now. You know? And suddenly, not only is my perception start to change of who I am based on the physical evidence that I created in my home, I have evidence. It's not a story anymore.
Yeah. It's not a desire. It's not a wish. It's not potentiality. It's achieved.
Yes. And now I walk in, I'm reaffirming this new story because I spent $6 on light bulbs. I'm reaffirming the story. Like, I'm the type of person that puts red light bulbs in my bedroom. You know, and now I'm also having the physiological effect of that. Now suddenly I'm sleeping a little bit better. Oh, wow, interesting. I'm sleeping better. So now my body's not hanging on to adipose tissue as much. I'm not chronically running this high cortisol stress response throughout the day because I'm rested. I'm not overeating, and also overeating probably sugary processed refined food that's like immediate energy, but also ends up burning holes in the gut lining of my gut, breaking down more of my boundaries because I just slept better. And a part of that, you know, I opened my window, like I said, now I'm getting more natural, fresh light and fresh air into my house. So as opposed to breathing air conditioned air and deionizing the air, actually making it less healthy to breathe. Nothing wrong with air conditioning, you know, but it's not as healthy as it would be if it was just you're breathing like air in the woods. I opened my window, and now just by way of just me cracking my freaking window, suddenly I start to be able to electrically charge my cells more effectively. And by opening the window, I'm getting more sunlight. I'm intentionally exposing my eyes to that sunlight. And now suddenly, once again, I'm sleeping better. My energy's better. I'm more calm and more relaxed. And it's because I just made these very small, basic decisions that cost me like less than probably $30 and less than 10 or 20 minutes that times a day, a week, a month, a year start to pay massive dividends. And then from there, because the body thing was too hard, I didn't want to do dumbbells. It's just too much. You know, I didn't want to get a dietitian. It's just too much. Suddenly I regained some energy because I made some subtle shifts in my external home. Now suddenly my motivation, my perception of who I think I am starts to shift a little bit. I have a girlfriend now because she's willing to come over to my house. I do mood lighting now. I'm a mood lighting guy.
Yeah. Doubles as mood lighting. I like it.
You know, now all of a sudden, oh my God, I'm in love. Suddenly love opened up for me. Holy crap. This is crazy. I'm in love. I haven't been in love for 10 years. I want to show up better for this person in my life. Okay, cool. Like I need to get a six pack. Heck yeah, let's get a six pack. Because you spent $6 on changing the light in your room and you cracked your window and you maybe did a couple other small little shifts in your external environment, allow that to run, that cycle to run. And in 6 months, 2 months, 3 months, 1 year, who knows, suddenly you start to have these bigger shifts because you actually leaned in and you created physical evidence for yourself.
Frick, that's amazing. I love how you painted put all of that together because it is that symbiotic relationship that we're talking about and how something so subtle that seems like nothing. Yeah. Oh, buying a Red Bull, bullshit, who gives a fuck? Right. It's actually everything. So thank you, Aaron. I'm curious for people listening, like where can they begin their journey exploring more about you, about everything that we've talked about? I know you have a podcast, so they can go there, but also just taking on and dipping their toe into the Align Method.
Oh, cool. So we're going to do a podcast with you on mine, Align Podcast, next week. So people could check that out, like you mentioned. And then if people do want to go and actually like the movement training and some of like the Align Method, we have an online course that the first week is actually totally free. So I don't feel weird sharing about it because it's free. So you can start the first week and then after that, you can just let it go. I think you'd probably be inclined to want to keep going through it. But the first week goes through, there's movement assessment on that. So you can actually assess like, where is my body at in space right now? Like, how am I doing? So it goes through assessing the ankle and the knee and the hip and the spine and the neck and the shoulders and all that, just to give you a sense of like where you're at. And then we go through four different self-care practices, specifically around like manual therapy, body work, things that will help a person if they're doing any kind of training or yoga or any kind of like self-care at home. And then it takes people through a sit-rise test and it gives you a score based on how well a person can get up and down off the ground, which I think is very interesting. There was actually some, you might've heard of, there's research in, it was done in Brazil. It was in Sao Paulo, Brazil specifically. And they had folks, it was between the late 50s to early 80s. And there was like a 6.5 year study. And they took them through this sit rise test. And they started every person off with a perfect 10 score. And then every time you have to like, if you wobble a little bit as you're getting up down off the ground, then you reduce half a point. If you have to use a hand, then you reduce a full point. You get all the way down and up off of the ground. And they found that people that had 8 to 10 scores compared to people that had like 0 to 2 scores. It's like they were like 6 times more likely to pass away during the duration of the study. So it was just, it was a very massive wow. impact on the overall vitality that you still sustain.
Makes sense. Yeah, the mobility, the muscle, the strength to be able to do that.
And getting up and down off of the ground, it's one of those things. I know we're wrapping up and now I'm going into like another rant. So
it's okay. Rant it off.
It's the number one leading reason that elderly need assisted living. You know, so the reason that elderly need to get a red button, you know, or go to a home, the number one reason is just I've fallen, I can't get up off the floor. I've lost my physical autonomy. I've lost sovereignty within myself. That has nothing to do with being a human. You know, so if you go to another country, you know, I'm in Costa Rica right now. Costa Rica's being pretty darn Americanized, but maybe go to Cambodia or something. You'll see old women, 70s, 80s. I don't know how old they are. I didn't ask, but like old women carrying logs on their heads, ropes across the top of the head, huge stack of logs on their back, marching through the woods, no problem. So it's not a human condition. It's a product of us actually disassociating from these different parts of our bodies. The longer that we disassociate as a product of not utilizing them, the bigger the chasm becomes. And eventually the chasm becomes so big that we can't bridge that gap anymore. And now we become a liability society and we need to go someplace else. That's a product of us just not utilizing our bodies while we could be utilizing our bodies. So it's a similar thing. It's like, when life is easy, lean into hard stuff because it's going to get hard. So when you have the body to use lean
it.
Into it.
Yeah.
Use it because it's going to get hard. And the more that you decide, like right now, you know what? I want to take advantage of this physical experience. The more you're going to reap the reward of that in, you know, immediately, but also in 10 years and 20 years and 50 years. And, you know, my intention is for myself and, you know, anybody that's willing to listen, to really feel more confident and empowered in their body with every passing day. The concept of aging, it really is misinformation. I hate using that term because it's, you know, that's like not the most. But the
are
way
you
that
Anthony
aging,
Fauci? What is going on?
It's a misaligned story.
Yeah.
You know, so we have the perception that aging is something where you get slower and you get kind of a little more cranky and your joints start to hurt and everything just starts to dilapidate and fall apart. And then you start matching that story. And then if you wouldn't accept anything else because it's your identity starter, it's who you think you should be. And so starting to kind of like open the mind up into like you did with your kid, like, what if I ran a different story? I'm supposed to be fat bod dad or however you call it. Like, I'm going to go the opposite direction. I'm going to change my story. I have that flexibility. And so if a person starts to pay just a little bit of attention to their body on a daily, regular basis, and they do something as simple as they put a floor cushion down on the ground. And, you know, I'm doing this sitting on a cushion right now on this like swinging bench in the middle of the jungle, which is very convenient. But I'm sitting down, I'm crossing my legs. You might have seen me like wobbling back and forth a bunch of times. I put my legs in like a 90-90 position, a straddle position. You know, I'm kind of twisting a little bit as I'm going. That's something, this is, I'm like doing like work technically right now.
Right.
And it was like a little mini yoga class for me. So I'm going to get up from this experience. I'm going to walk around and I mobilize my hips the whole entire time. It's also more effective for circulation. So I'm bringing my legs closer to my heart. So it's better for digestion. It just takes the weight off my circulatory system by just getting my dang legs a little closer to my heart. And also, you know, making the connective tissue more healthy and hydrated and all that stuff. You know, so little subtle things like that, if people would just implement into their daily life, spend a little time on the ground, get a pull-up bar. Put a pull-up bar in a doorway that you pass through regularly and just do a little swing on the pull-up bar. That's one of those things like the red light that will stack up. And right now it might not seem like much, but multiply, extend that out, that pull-up bar out times a year or 10 years or 30 years or the rest of your life. Suddenly you've completely restructured the shape of your shoulder girdle. You've decompressed all of your spinal segments. Your cerebral spinal fluid and all the different fluids that are circulating through your, you know, from your sacrum all the way up to your brain, they're all moving better. Lymphatic fluid, all the different things are decompressed and able to circulate and move well. Just because you got a stupid $25 pull-up bar from Amazon totally. And put it in your freaking doorway.
Yeah. It and seems like so the, subtle.
Like the diseases of civilization are so preventable. Like it's unbelievable that we, you know, are just not making change. But I think it's because people think that they don't have a choice, you know, right. And it's if we can come back in and just like find a little bit of motivation to just make a couple subtle changes and not like disregard some big, massive, crazy, I'm going to lose 50 pounds or whatever, like make subtle changes. And make them, you know, multiply, make another subtle change, and then just exist in your environment, in your new subtly shifted environment, and just kind of see what happens.
The evidence stacks up and so does the results.
Yeah. Yeah. So if people wanted to try the free week of the program, that's at alignpodcast.com/AMP, stands for Align Method Program. Perfect. And yeah, so I'd recommend people check that out just because, you know, you get some good stuff out of that and it doesn't cost anything. And then I think that's probably it.
You have an Instagram?
Yeah, Aaron Alexander is the Instagram, and feel free to DM me or...
Sweet. We'll make sure we link it all out. And Aaron, thanks so much for joining from the jungle.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. That was a fun conversation. I appreciate you.
Dude, so fun. Appreciate you.